Did you know the risk of cancer does not stop at the scene of a fire? Firefighters are constantly exposed to diesel exhaust fumes and other airborne toxins that get trapped inside the station. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip through the combination of MagnaGrip exhaust removal systems and AirHawk air purification systems. Learn more at MagnaGrip.com. This fire engineering podcast is made possible by Tincata Protective Fabrics. The global leader in flame-resistant fabrics, Tincata Protective Fabrics enables millions of people worldwide to be great at what they do. Generations of industry professionals serving in the fire service, industrial, and military industries rely on Tincata Fabrics for safety, comfort, and confidence. From the harshest working conditions to the welcoming site of home, Tincata recognizes the people they're protecting are unique individuals whose lives extend beyond work. Supporting a world of evolving needs, Tincata's innovations lead the way in user-centric design, technology, and sustainability around the globe. To learn more, please visit tincatafabrics.com.
Hey, Halton here, and I just want to take a few seconds to remind you we're just 4 weeks away from FDIC. Hot classes are filling up fast. There is space left in a few of the workshops. Please sign up now. Don't miss out on an opportunity to get CAPC credit, attend some of the greatest events in firefighting. This April, go to FDIC.com.
That should be the opening of every firefighter podcast.
You think we're live?
I think we're live.
Live fire, right? Live fire. But we're not here to talk about fire. We're here to talk about straight talk and what that means. Welcome, everybody. This is, I'm Dan DeGrace, retired something out of Chicago for a couple of years now. I got a couple of invited guests that hopefully you'll enjoy today. Our conversation that really is surrounding a topic that Bobby obviously gave us a platform for, which is behavioral health and what that means, right? Mental health, substance use, emotional health, and something that is being kind of discussed and thrown around in different venues more and more often. I want to kind of give you that a little bit because you wonder, well, why am I here? I'm here because Bobby told me to be here. And so I invited Rob Fisher, who I'll introduce in a minute, to kind of really bring invited guests like Pat Kenny, amongst others, to kind of have a conversation about the things that we really kind of swept under the rug and talk behind closed doors and really have that straight conversation. So that's a little history behind Straight Talk, and thanks to Bobby, we were allowed to do this, and now we're, for the time being, allowed to do this on Facebook Live until we get kicked off. But my co-host is Rob Fisher, a battalion chief and Fools executive board member from Snohomish, Washington, and I practiced at Snohomish, three syllables. A lot of letters, a lot more than my last name. Rob, thanks for joining us.
I get, like every time we talk, whenever you say Snohomish, I'm impressed because it's a tongue twister, even though if you just pronounce it as it is spelled, it's easy to say. But yeah, it's good to be here, Danny. We haven't, I can't remember the last show we did. It was last spring, or I'm sorry, last fall. Or somewhere in the end of fall area, but I enjoy being on here with you, and things are going good. I'm in Vegas right now with the wife, and enjoying a little bit of the warmer weather than it is up in Seattle area where I'm from. But I'm looking forward to the show. We've had Pat on before. We've talked with Pat. Mm-hmm. We've been out and been at conferences with Pat, and so this is going to be a good show.
Yeah, cool. And just to, before I introduce Pat, like Rob, we've had Pat on before. He was in the process of writing a book, which he completed. The book entitled Taking the Cape Off, How to Lead Through Mental Illness, Unimaginable Grief and Loss. I'm just going to say this, and I've known Pat for, probably 10 years, and he could probably tell you how we got introduced, but I'm sure that writing a book and writing a book about this was not on his to-do list when he was going through the fire service. One of the conversations that Pat and I had, and actually it was after me and you chatted, Rob, is, and I'm going to ask Pat in a second, is what don't people know about you? Now, he goes around the country and speaks about, unfortunately, the loss of several members of his family, talks about, and is vulnerable about his, I'm going to say, in all due respect, shortcomings. I have plenty of them, and I'm sure anybody that's watching this knows some of them, and you might find out some more today. Rob is not, because he's perfect. He's a battalion chief, and he has to be that way. Show that other picture real quick, Bob, or Rob. Show that. Look at that.
See, that's a stud picture.
That is a stud picture. And yeah, so bring us. There we go. That's better.
I'm glad I can please you today. That's perfect.
No, you did several times already. Little chuckle. With this serious kind of conversation, and we know this from the fire service, is we have to have humor. Humor is necessary for us for not only self-care, but also for me to put myself on top of you guys and beat you guys down a little bit too.
That's why Bobby's already left the room, for crying out.
I know, it only took like 9 minutes to get him kicked.
Done there.
I love the fact that Danny's the one that's kind of beating us up, and Bobby's going to come up from the top turnbuckle and just club. And
start swinging.
Danny.
Yeah.
Well, listen, this is going to be good.
He does not scare me. And we can go there if we need to, because I could tell all of fire engineering how he kicked me out of FDIC. And we could talk about that if we have a lull. But before we get to the Bobby, Pat Kenny, good friend, again, known him for quite a while, know his history, author, speaker, instructor, teacher, friend, mentor, many different things. And before I ask you the question, Pat, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be back on again. I always enjoy the open forum, and I enjoy the humor. Some of these interviews sometimes get just a little bit old and a little bit rough, and it's good to have fun. I try to do that even when I'm talking about a tough subject. It helps me when I'm speaking, just to use a little bit of humor, and so you don't take yourself too seriously, no matter what the topic.
Well, welcome, Pat. And Bobby, do we need any type of introduction?
If I could take one moment, just to pitch FDIC, we're 4 weeks away. We'll all be there, except Rob, because he's got home fires burning, and that happens, you know. So we'll miss you, Rob, but thank you for all your support over the years and your continued support. You'll be missed. Classes really are filling up. So when you go to the website, a couple of the classes, I think Aaron Fields' Nozzle Forward, the new Bobby Eckert's class, I believe, is sold out. Suburban Tactics, I believe the Writ Under Fire class is sold out. So a bunch of classes selling out. So please get in there early. Still great classes left in the hands-on. Drilling at the Speed of Flashover, Water Rescue, Live Fire has a few slots left in it. So there's a couple of really great classes still left. Grant Schwalbe's Making the Grab is still available. And so some really, really great classes. Forcible Entry with Chris Minicello still has some slots left. So please get on and get your stuff. Get the classes you want, right? So please do that. And oddly enough, there's a couple hundred of you out there that signed up for the full hot package that still haven't picked your classes, which is always like amazing to me. You paid your money, so pick your classes so we can put you where you want to be. So that'd be great. I'd appreciate that. Also, please support the special events that are going on this year, something that's near and dear to everybody on this call. The Firefighter Cancer Support Network is now having the fun run. The Courage and Valor folks gave them the fun run so that they could raise money for the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. They don't do a lot of fundraisers throughout the year. Nobody in that organization takes any money. Nobody. So, and they're there to help folks when they're going through cancer. And as we're talking about wellness, you know, Dan will tell you that it's really important to have somebody to talk to, you know, and all of us can tell you it's important to have somebody to talk to that you can when you get sick. The first phone call I made in 95 when I found out prostate cancer was to my buddy Ted Nee, who is a firefighter, teaching buddy of mine. Didn't call my wife, didn't call, you know, my parents. I called my buddy Ted Nee. Hey, Ted, I said, I got prostate cancer. He goes, it's prostate, you moron. And that's exactly what he said. So, which is what Pat was alluding to earlier. We were off air. We were giving each other hard times about different things, which I think is really important. Maybe it's something to talk about when we talk about, you know, mental health and wellness and, you know, I think, you know, sometimes people want to get morose, you know what I mean? And some of it's really difficult and it's really painful. But we come from a culture that, and when, it's not that we're making fun of it, but we make fun of ourselves, we make fun of each other. And anyway, I think that's a really cool topic. But please, if you could support the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, our good friends from the NFFF, Stop, Drop, Rock and Roll, they have the stair climb, and I'm forgetting something. Oh, the backyard barbecue at the Friday evening at the Combat Challenge. And then you can jump on the bus and go right out to the Union Party. So Friday night, we've got a new thing, a little barbecue. So you get some food in you before you go to the free beer. It's a good idea. Food first, beer. So take advantage of both of those things, both of which are free. So please do that. They are asking if you want to throw a couple of bucks in the hat for the National Fallen Firefighters. We'd appreciate it. So please take advantage of that. The Fool's Bash is on. Billy and I met the other night, so it's going to be great. We're going to have a great DJ, a lot of fun. We're going to be outside this year. We're not going to be inside the pavilion. We're going to do the whole thing outside because we just like being outside. So we got a couple of tents we put up and stuff. So it's going to be absolutely great. So Dan, thank you for allowing me to take a couple of times to pitch FDIC. It's really important to me. A lot of really great people put a ton of work into it, and I take all the credit, which is par for the course. It's what chiefs do. So please come and enjoy yourselves. Have a great time. Share a little camaraderie with people that you love and people that love you, and some great classes. I mean, it's just some wonderful educators. I hate to say anything nice about Dan in public because it would ruin our relationship. So I won't say anything nice about Dan in public. I'll go right to Pat. Pat's doing a class and it'll be really great. I'm just kidding. Dan's doing his classes. It'll be really great. So please come to Dan's class and Pat's class if you want to know more about this topic. And I think it's an important topic of, you know, and it's one of the topics that is so unique. It's not there's no silver bullets, man. And everybody's so different, right? I mean, everybody. And, you know, it's fascinating. We live in an age where people want to talk about their uniqueness, and then they define their uniqueness by what groups they belong to, which makes no sense. Your uniqueness is the fact that you're you. And when it comes to mental health, it's a big deal, because trying to express how something hit you is tough. And I'll shut up because Dan tells me I talk too much.
Well, we got to help Danny out. Danny, he used a big word there, remorse. Remorse, right? So the gloomy, you know, ill-tempered. I just want to make sure you understand.
Me?
Yeah, I'm just helping you out, buddy.
I have that glazed eye.
Morose. Morose, not morose.
Morose.
Dire or dour or gloomy.
Gloomy.
You know, Dan, you told me no math or no big words in this thing. What are we doing here? Like,
we have Bobby on here.
I wasn't sure if Bob was going to be here, so we have to go from one and two syllable words to three and four.
We got it.
I appreciate Rob throwing me under the bus, but I don't know if he can use it in a sentence. But Bob, you mentioned what the coolest thing is at FDIC, honestly, is when I show up on Tuesdays and I see the men and women carrying their bunker gear, which I still do have the old three-quarter boot and all that stuff from the old times. But it's actually cool to see them hot and sweaty and tired and haven't done something physically, because let's be honest, is from what we're offering and from a mental health standpoint, we're asking people to sit in a classroom and just take information. So actually that you have that physicality is great. That's why we got in the fire service. This here is honestly not for everybody. The conversation about behavioral health, mental wellness, and asking people how you're doing is a common action, but I don't know if people really understand what words, what type of words there are. Rob asked Pat when he first got here how he's doing, and Pat gave the typical answer, I'm good. I often say, hey, do you really want to know how I'm doing? And that's really the first question, Pat, is, you know, many people, including myself, and I don't read a ton of books. One, I just don't read well. I can't sit still very often, but I can't read, Bobby, though. I can put words and sentences together. Mm-hmm. And I did read Pat's book, again, Taking the Cape Off, How to Lead Through Mental Illness, Unimaginable Grief and Loss, which we said in the very beginning is not something that Pat ever aspired or wanted to do, but really did it because he promised Eileen that he was going to write it. And that took a lot. I can tell you this from what I know, that it has been well received and touched so many lives. Just like the people here, we're here not because, hey, we're getting paid a lot. Are we getting paid? No, we're not getting paid anything. Because it matters and we're going to have these conversations. So what's happened since the book, Pat?
Well, first of all, thank you for the kind words. And something that you mentioned that I think is really true that I didn't. First of all, you're correct. I didn't come into the fire service and go, boy, someday I'm going to write this book. I have trouble writing a Christmas card. So that was not on my agenda. And if it wasn't for my angel bride making me do that, literally as she was getting ready to pass over to heaven, I wouldn't have done it. Second is a lot of people don't read anymore. They listen to books. I did not promise her I would do an audible version, but I was talked into doing that. So that's out there. So that's really one of the things that I worked on for a long time. I was simplistic as I usually am and thought this is going to be a lot easier than writing the book. I'll just read a few pages. I'll be done in 2 weeks and we're good to go. I didn't know it would take months and that some parts of reading it caused me to relive some of those scenarios. And in some ways, even though when you go back into a scenario and if it's something that was really difficult and it causes you some pain, I learned from a very smart psychologist a long time ago who told me that pain's okay. And it's all right to go back in that room. It's all right to go back in Sean's room. It's all right to go back in Eileen's room and feel that pain and feel that loss and let it get as deep inside you as it needs to. You just can't stay there. And I think that's what I've learned since I retired in January of last year. That's been a journey, much more of a journey than I thought. People always said, be prepared when you're leaving. Go to have something, which I did. I was still lucky enough to instruct and to speak. And now I had the book and everybody would say, well, there you go. You had a path. But there was a part of me that still was seeking validation. And validation different than ego. Everybody's got an ego. I certainly have one. But that validation walking in the morning and having somebody sit at the kitchen table, go, good morning, Chief. I missed that. And I didn't think I would, but I did. So trying to find where's my niche has been a lot of the last year. I'm getting better. I'm not there yet. I don't think I'll be a finished product until I get to the other side and God goes, boy, am I glad you're here because you sure messed things up down there. But I'm going to aim to try to do that until I get there.
Well, Pat, you mentioned something about hurt, and I think everybody knows, well, if you don't, it's okay. I've been in this behavioral health world really my entire life, growing up in an alcoholic family, going to school, getting a psychology degree, become a certified addictions counselor, working for several different organizations. And I run a program called the Florian Program, specific to first responders. That aside, what I've learned is that everybody hurts, both physically, mentally, and emotionally. We don't usually talk about that mental and emotional hurt. But there's a piece too that what I've learned both personally and professionally is that sometimes that hurt is necessary. And sometimes we hold on to that because we feel that if we let that go, we let go of the persons or persons that we have lost. And we don't want to lose that memory. So that person that shared with you, what I've learned is that my intent is not to take anything away. I know for myself personally, in my upbringing and wrongdoings or whatever transpired in my life, I don't forget about those incidences or feelings. I just don't stay there. And so I guess I'm going to ask you a personal question, is that with that hurt and pain that I have not experienced, and I hope I never do, of losing a son or a daughter or a spouse, and you unfortunately lost both. You've shared in public and private in a sense of that anger that comes out because of that hurt and that pain. How do you manage that?
I think for me, what I had to do is I had to put meaning to it. There are loads of people who've been through a whole lot more trauma than I have. So you're not special because you go through that. But you need to figure out the whys. And I wasn't sure on some of the whys. I will tell you, Bobby and I've had this discussion a lot off air about our faith, and I'm very proud of my faith. I'm not alive without my faith. I'm just not. It's ironic. It's like, well, you go around the world and you talk about suicide and about ways to avoid it and how to be proactive. And so the last thing you would think is that the guy sitting there talking about it would ever think about that. And that's not the case. I'm not Superman. I don't have any special powers. And when things started to pile on and bad things happened and I buried one person after another, it was like, why? I need the meaning. For me, doesn't necessarily mean it's the absolute meaning. I may get to heaven, I hope, and be told that's not really what it was about, but I had to put meaning to it. So in Sean's case, I had to put meaning to his journey. I had to put meaning to his pain, which led me down the road of going, yeah, that was an angel you were lucky to have as a gift for a while. And you have to take what he taught you. And that's the meaning. That's the why of what he went through. Otherwise, what a waste of a life, and how I would have missed it as his dad and his mom to have him around. And then the same thing with Eileen's journey. It was like, and Bobby mentioned it, and I want to just jump on for a second to echo what he said, that I went to the Cancer Support Network, even though Eileen was not a firefighter, although she was as much a firefighter as me, or I wouldn't have got to where I was. But I reached out to them and said, what do I do? Like, well, okay, you've been down this journey of losing somebody already. Don't you kind of know what the playbook is? And no, you don't. So I needed a why. Why now? Am I going to lose my best friend? Why am I going to lose the other person in my life that I leaned on to get through that horrible situation of losing Sean? And I think for me, if I find the whys, I don't have to like it and I don't have to agree with it. And obviously in both of their losses, I don't like or agree with either one of them. I wish I was not on this show. I wish I had never written a book. I wish all that, but that's not the case. So I saw in her journey, the why was, make the comparison that mental illness is a physical illness, not a character deficiency. It's not a weakness. It's not a choice. It's things that go on in you. And I watched her fight, and it really reminded me of Sean's fight, except that Sean's was done in private because of the stigma. Hers was done in public because it was accepted, and she was heroic, and she was heroic in everything she did, as so many cancer patients are heroic, including our guy who's on the screen here with us. I mean, they're just heroic in their actions because it's very easy to go, not anymore. And so the why is what's gotten me to where I am. That combined with my faith about someday I'll get to see them again and hope I made them proud, that's what keeps me going.
Hey, Pat, it's Rob. You mentioned faith, and I'm just curious, how have you weaved your faith in with the book and in with, you know, your everyday life Tell us just a little bit more about how the two pieces go together.
Sure. Well, for those who don't know, I started out, of course, Irish Catholic family, only child, which everybody says that's not possible, but it was in my case. And only child, your mom has a male son, only child, my mom born in Ireland, my dad too. Figure you're going to be a priest. I never got that memo, but that's kind of where they were figuring I was going to go. And so I've had faith as a part of my life all the way through, losing my dad when I was younger and feeling like he was somewhere watching me and I didn't want to let him down. I guess there's a lot of that when we're in the, this service and we work as a team, your biggest drive is you don't want to let your team down. You ask any good company officer if they're in a horrible situation, they're not worried about getting hurt. They're worried about their team getting hurt. And so my faith kind of got me through those beginning situations when I was an adolescent. And as I've gone through the fire service, what I use in that faith is I'm not afraid to talk about it. And there's a difference between faith and religion. Everybody always puts a title on it. Well, I'm Irish Catholic. Well, you're Lutheran. You're Buddhist. I really could care less what that title is. Faith is about what you believe in that bigger picture, I think. And at times I really use it to look in the mirror and go, what are you supposed to do today? And I kind of just give myself that permission to just listen, as silly as it may sound, and go, whether that's Dan reaching out and going, would you like to do this program? Or it's Bobby reaching out and kindly inviting me to instruct, or if it's a neighbor who's having a problem and asked me to come over and help. That kind of, I see that as part of the faith path. I don't believe in coincidences, none. I think everything happens for a reason. Everybody who's on the screen was put in my life for a reason. And I think we are. And as soon as we accept that as part of, I need to help you and you need to help me, it's a little easier to put one foot in front of the other.
And it ties to like things that are happening in our lives, the loss of Sean and your wife, those happen for a reason. And and it goes back to the why. As we're left here, we are to try to figure out the why and help, make something of it in our lives and understand and use that to help others, help ourselves. So, yeah.
Well, that's the same thing that happens here. Is I remember when Bobby asked, he says, hey, we can't find anybody else to do a hump day hangout on every fifth Wednesday, so can you do it? And I'm like, why? Well, he goes, yeah, I already told you the answer, because we can't find anybody else. So I had to sit home actually and talk to my spouse and say, it's the why. It's like, why me? Why now? Why this? The same thing when he asked me to speak in front of all the people. It's like, why? And he told me his why, but we have to know our why. And in this field, whether it be the fire service or parenting, being the son or daughter or being the mom or dad, I actually had this conversation with the 14 men and women that are in our program today. And what is your why? Well, do you want to maintain sobriety? Do you want to get back to your career? Forget about what anybody else thinks. What drives you? And Bobby and I have had this conversation in regards to the fire service. Bob has said this is the greatest, I'm not even going to say job or career, pathway in the world. We are fortunate, many of us are fortunate to have this ability to do this. When you look at 2 million active and retired members, think of 330 million people. There's 328 million in the United States that don't get to do what we do. And there were 45,000 people that took the test in Chicago back in 85 with me for a reason. I never want to come across as that this job has a bad ending. There are things that happen. And as you're sharing, Pat, there's things that happen in our lives and how do we respond to that? I do not look at myself as broken. I don't look at anybody as broken. I don't look at anybody as defeatist. I look at everybody as a skilled individual, and the presentation that I'm going to do this year is thriving in the fire service. How, there's so many skilled, exceptional people, way brighter than me in the fire service. And we see that every day at the kitchen table, right? When you have a conversation like, man, I didn't know you did that. I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know you could do that. And then you see people work at a scene and you're like, oh my gosh. So yeah, suicide, substance use, mental health, you could call it mental illness, whatever. Everybody has mental health. No demographic is excluded from mental health. And that's the question of how are you today? How are you today? What does that mean? Let's look at a Bobby. Okay, he ate lunch, right? And he looks as, you know, calm as a morning lake with no wind. But he's probably got 42 different plates he's got to spin in about 30 minutes. And he's wondering when I'm going to shut up. But that's okay. But he gave me this platform. So with all that said, you've been kind of an open book, right? You wrote a book and you're probably going to write another book. We don't know where that's going to go. But what do people not know about Pat Kenny? And that question's coming to you too, Bobby. You might tell me to go fly a kite, but you joined us, so you got to stay. All the stuff that you've revealed about yourself, good, bad, and indifferent, what don't people know about Pat Kenny? And we say this because Rob and I had this discussion the other day about mentorship and mentors and what we let people know about ourselves. Like, and Bobby could talk about this in the sense that people's talking about leadership and wanting to promote their skill set and leadership, but very seldom do they say, yeah, but I suck at this. Nobody leads with that. Yeah, I suck at this. So what don't they know about you, Pat?
Well, a couple. It's a good question. And I want to just go back just to one thing you said that really made me think about something. So the whole premise of the book of Taking the Cape Off is all of us try as best we can to fix things and make everything right. And when you get into this, and I call it a vocation, I always believe being a firefighter is a vocation, whether you get paid for it or not. We think we can fix it. And then when you can't, you're kind of caught in that cape, starts to choke you. So you need to know when to take it off, but it's just as important that you need to know when to put it back on, and that it's important that you do put it back on in terms of moving forward. And I think back to, so I get up on the stage and people, and Bobby's probably the best, not blown smoke, the most powerful speaker I've seen get up there, where it's just like, holy cow. Half the time, I'm not sure if he's making stuff up because it's so far over my head that he could be making it up and I wouldn't know. But I mean, just kind of, you want to run through the wall when he's done. And people will go, how do you do that? Or if I get up there and I talk about Sean and Eileen and they're like, I don't know how you do that. First of all, I'm not up there alone. I've got them and every other firefighter, whoever has died by suicide, standing behind me going, you can do this. So it's a great support group. But the part that probably people don't know about me, first of all, is I want to throw up every time before I get on that stage. I don't eat before I get up on there. It's like when I was playing ball, I never ate before I played in the game because my stomach won't handle it. I'm a nervous wreck, and I'm able to fool people, and I use their strength. But I think that whole thing about the when and the whys, it was the youngest fire chief in my county when it happened. I had no intentions of being a fire chief. I wanted to stay as a lieutenant. I loved being part of the team. We had an opening in the department for a deputy chief, and they were going to go to the outside. There were only three of us eligible, and we all literally went out for beer and we made a pact. Where all three of us are going to try. Nobody's taking a dive. All three of us are going to try. Whichever one of us gets it will now come off shift and go on days, and the other two will have to support that. So kind of the short straw if you win. Well, I got the short straw and won. And then the chief decided he was leaving 2 years later, and that wasn't on the docket at all. And he wrote this wonderful letter to the board going, I know this guy's young and inexperienced, but this is the future of the department. And I had a village president who said, we're going to put you through an assessment center. I was like, well, what do I need to do that for? I mean, I've got a recommendation from the chief and he's well-respected and you're going to go through that. And it pissed me off, really. So my honest intention when I went into the assessment center was, I'm going to beat everybody sitting at this table, and then I'm not going to take the job. So with that kind of lunatic mentality, I did just that. I went in, I got in the ring, I looked around the room, and there were some Chiefs in there I had zero respect for because they were Chief in name only. There were some other Chiefs in there who were powerful people that I thought, wow, maybe I could stay as the deputy and work for you, but I think I'm going to go back to lieutenant. But I'm going to beat all of you anyways. So when the day came, I was in the first spot. I was called to the president's office, offered the job, and I said, can I think about it? And she looked at me, said, excuse me? I said, yeah, can I think about it? She said, do you mind if I ask you why? I said, yeah. I go, you didn't trust me. I said, nobody here trusted me. I go, I've been running this department for the last 9 months. I go, the chief recommended me, and I go, you made me go through all this. You made me go through the pain and my family too. And I go, I'm not sure I want it, so can I go home and think about it? Wise woman. Taught me a lesson in that moment. Yes, certainly go home and think about it. She could have told me to go pound salt and I'm going to hire the guy that you really don't want to deal with, but she didn't do that because she had a lot more smarts than I did. So I went home and the first thing Eileen said to me when I walked in and said, I told him I was going to think about it. She said, are you out of your mind? What do you mean? You busted your rear end for this. And I told her why. And as only a great partner was, she's like, well, whatever you decide, I'll stand behind you. So the next day I went back thinking I wasn't going to take it. And I met in the office with her and she said, before you start, would you mind if I say something? I said, absolutely not. And she said, you left here pretty angry yesterday. I could see you're Irish. She goes, I was pretty angry too. Offered you a position and you weren't even excited about it. So let me tell you how I went through this thought process. You're 34 years old. You look like that you could use a Happy Meal from McDonald's. She goes, I'm not worried about you standing on a scene and running it because I've seen you do that in any kind of emergency that you could be in. But this is a very political town with a lot of powerful people. You're going to have to stand up to them at a board meeting when you really believe in something, and you're going to have to sell it and you're going to have to fight for it. So my thought was, we're going to put you in the ring with the best we can find. And if you're really that good, you'll beat them. And then I will have confidence as the village president to tell the board, this is my fire chief. She said, and that's what you did. I'll just tell you the quote, you kicked their ass. She goes, so you're the right guy, but now I need you to look at me and go, I want this job. Well, I'm like a pool sitting there going, you idiot. And I'm like, Madam President, I would be excited to do that. And she goes, and I'll tell you what, Pat, at the board meeting, I will tell people exactly why we did this process. So she told the entire fire department and their class A's, as well as the village board on TV, why the process was done and that I kicked their butt. And I wouldn't be sitting here now if she didn't have the courage to do that. I also wouldn't be sitting here now with some of the smarts I used throughout my whole career leading about don't jump to conclusions, really think through the process to get the best result, and then make sure that when people do it, that you encourage them about their abilities when they're probably doubting themselves more than anything. So her name was Joyce Skoog. God bless you, Joyce. You're up there. And if it wasn't for her, she's one of those people like people on the screen who I wouldn't be who I am today without that.
Well, appreciate that, Pat. I'd imagine you probably didn't share that with too many people in too many venues.
Because they all would agree you should have never taken the job. What are you, an idiot? So I'm
Bobby, are you willing?
Sure. Well, first I got to respond to Pat very quickly about our heritage. You know, recently the Pope was in Ireland and some of the bishops asked the Pope, if Jesus hadn't been born a Jew, you know, what nationality do you think he might have been? And so the Pope said, well, he would have been, Irish. And one of the bishops said, oh, you're just blowing sunshine up our pipe, Your Holiness. You're just saying that because you're here in Ireland. You want to make us feel good about ourselves. And the Pope says, oh, no. And he said, you know, absolutely, he would have been Irish. And the bishop pressed him further. Oh, Your Holiness, come on now. An Irishman, come on, how do you get there? And the Pope said, well, honestly, if you think about it, he was an only child. He lived at home till he was 33 years old, and his mother thought he was God. So there you go, for our Irish heritage out there, right? And
I'm going to use that again. I won't give you credit for it, but I'm going to use that. I like it.
That's one of the oldest Irish jokes out there.
Pat moved out of the house at 30.
Well, hey, I'm raising a Jesus myself right now. So to the public speaking issue, which is interesting because you're right. I often get asked, you know, how do you do that? And I'll tell you a quick story. When I first took over FDIC, it was funny. A young fella came running up to me and I gave one of my talks and he says, "Well, Chief, that was amazing. Running back and forth on the stage for 25 minutes, you know, ranting and raving all those stories. That was amazing. I wanted to run through a wall." And I said, "Well, thank you." And he goes, "How do you do that?" I said, "Well, you know, I write my speeches a long time and I rehearse every day for 6-9 months. And I got people that help me with the editing and there's lighting and music and there's teleprompters. And I've got, you know, the invisible teleprompter. I can always check where I'm at and a lot of rehearsal and a lot of people help me do it, but thank you. Thank you very much." And the next year I gave him a talk and a young fella came running up to me, says, "Oh, Chief, I saw that talk and holy mackerel, 20 minutes up and down on the stage. I want to run through a wall." And I said, he goes, "How did you do that?" I said, "Well, you know, I've got a lot of help. I write them in advance. I got people that support me. You know, I got a lot of help on the stage and stuff. And so, but thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that." So next year, the young fella, give my talk, same thing. Fella runs up. "That was great. Blah, 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 blah. How do you do it?" I said, "Well, you know, I'm a gifted speaker."
Was that young guy, this was Rob? Was that Rob all 3 years in a row?
I stole that joke. If you want to see where that joke comes from, go online and search for Jimmy Stewart and Dean Martin.
Jimmy Stewart.
It was Jimmy Stewart. And he was talking about a skiing thing. And a young man came out, "How'd you do that? Well, I had stuntmen, blah, 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 blah." Finally, I just said, "Well, you know, I've been skiing all my life."
The problem is that our audience, probably most of them are so young, they don't even know who Jimmy Stewart is.
So we talked about mentoring and role models. Jimmy Stewart was one of the men that when I was growing up, I knew his life story and I knew, you know, who he was. And he was one of the people that I wanted to emulate was Jimmy Stewart. If you look at how Jimmy Stewart lived and served, Jimmy Stewart, when the war broke out, he was already a movie star. He went in, he flew more missions than he was supposed to. He was a pilot. He came out, he stayed in the Air Guard. He was like, I'm a true, Irish Catholics are like doves. We marry for life. We marry for life. We don't, you know, but that's just what we do. And I'm Irish Catholic. I'm unapologetically Irish Catholic and I have no qualms about it. I believe that wisdom starts with fear of God. And what that means in the Bible, and I was corrected the other day by Father Carney, of all people, not to call it the Old Testament. To our Jewish friends, they call it the Jewish Scriptures. So, which is fine. They're wrong. I'm just kidding. But I'm just a joke. The Bible says that, and it doesn't mean that you're feared, you know, God's going to hit you with lightning or anything like that or whatever. It just means that there's so much we'll never know. I mean, just so much. And this miracle, you know, there's a great book out currently by Eric Metaxas, and it's called Is Atheism Dead? Which I think is great, right? Great title, Is Atheism Dead? And I really recommend you read it, even if you are an atheist or whatever, because it talks about all of the mounting scientific knowledge for the existence of a higher power, of a God, you know, of God. And I'm a true believer, and unapologetically so. And I think to Pat's point, that has helped me out in more situations in life than anything. And as I've gotten older, like many folks, I've become more religious, because as you get closer and closer and learn to deal with your own mortality, you start to, you know, realize how little you do know, how uncertain you are about most of your opinions and thoughts, which is interesting, right? And I think it's healthy. And it's why people who are older are considered wise, because they don't consider themselves wise and they're willing to question everything they thought prior to this, except for some basic fundamental, unalienable beliefs, right? That they have no, and for me, one is the existence of God. And I'm happy with that. And it's helped me immensely. Trust me. I mean, we're all going to go through dark times If you think that you're homo deus, you're God, good luck with that, you know, because there's an illusion of control. We're in control of so little in life. Just think of your own lives. All of us things are going just fine, any one of us, but a 737 could drop out of the sky in a minute and take any one of us out. And there's nothing we could do about that. You know what I mean? We could, there's so little that we actually control, and yet we all want that feeling that we're in control. It's why I'll be the first to admit, I'm a terrible passenger in an airplane. If they let me sit up front and hold the wheel, I'd be fine, even though I don't know a thing about what I'm doing, but at least I would be flying it into the ground. You know what I mean? I'd be in control. That lack of control. And I think when people talk about those with mental health issues, to kind of bring all of this home, is that for me, you know, I've had my own issues, but I've lived with others like Pat, who I love more than life itself, who struggle. And the Chinese say, you're only as happy as your least happy child. And I know Dan, Rob, we've all been there. And Pat, you talked about illness you're allowed to be open with and illness you're not allowed to be open with. And part of that comes from the fact that, like, when I was really sick, you know, you lose 105 pounds, people notice, you know, you start buying your clothes in the teenage section, you know, people kind of figures, you know, it's not like Jenny Craig and Weight Watchers went horribly wrong, you know, and you lost a ton of weight, right? You can only tell people you had the flu for so long, and then you got to fess up and tell them you're sick, you know? Mental health isn't that way. Your physical appearance doesn't change. You know what I mean? The modalities aren't as defined, right? And the causes and the etiology of it isn't as understood. Why do certain people become bipolar? You know, we know it's young men roughly between 19 and 24, 25 it's most commonly where it starts to, why do some people struggle with, you know, what seems to us to be simple tasks where to them they're insurmountable? You know, the people with the obsessive compulsive issues or the hoarding issues. You know, in the fire service today, we always talk about hoarders and how we ought to, you know, break into their houses and throw all their crap away. Well, okay, how is that going to affect them? Yeah, it's making the situation safer maybe for us or for them in that house. But what it does to them emotionally and mentally, you know, that's up. Folks like Dan will tell you who pay attention to that kind of stuff. You could be hurting them. You know, you could be hurting them. And that should never be our intent. And so I think to Eileen's point and you know, for Sean and my son, it wasn't like when Eileen and I got sick, you know, and it was okay. When people get sick in here, it's so different. And which is why we're blessed to have people like Dan and places like Rosecrans and the Center for Excellence and both our sons went there and I just think that everybody's different too. Like, it's a lot, Pat, you can talk about it a lot easier than I can, and that doesn't make me bad or weaker. I just can't do it, you know what I mean? And so I don't, you know, I talk in generalities. I don't share when I'm sick. I don't tell people and everybody gets mad at me and I don't care because I don't like to do it. So I'm not going to do it. Dan taught me that. If you don't like to do it, don't do it. You know, right. Let them be mad. It's your life. Right. You know what I mean? It's your life. And so, you know, if anybody's out there and they're struggling with why, they feel like they can't share things with people, whatever, that's okay. I can't either. You know, it's really hard for me. And I only do it because, like, a really safe environment like this with you three guys and other friends of ours that I know are out there, other firefighters. But I would never talk like this with civilians around. I hate civilians. I imagine how good our jobs would be without the public. I'm just kidding. It's a joke.
It's a good thing that nobody listens to my show or Rob's in our show, because nobody else is listening to this.
Right. Imagine if you did this on one of the Hump Day Hangouts that the troops cared about.
Right.
No, but
I mean,
on a serious note, like the Friends of Bill meetings, you know, just come. You don't have to say a god darn thing. You know, if you're having problems with alcohol, you know, and and you don't think you're an alcoholic, then you probably are. But, you know, come to the Friends of Bill meetings. We have them at FDIC every morning. You know, you don't have to say anything. You don't want to say anything. Just come, you know, listen to the other guys and gals talk. And it's just like these. I mean, and I talk because Dan has asked me to and Pat's asked me to, and I know it's important, but it's really, really hard for me. It's not who I am. You know, it's just not who I am. Even with my own family, maybe it's a fault of mine or whatever. I'm not that guy. You know what I mean? I'm kind of a stoic person, and it's not something I tried to become. It's just who I am. I don't share well. You know, my wife will be the first one to tell you, 48 years. And, you know, I don't like to have conversations with people. I'm just not that guy. I'm that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And maybe it's because we grew up in those Irish Catholic environments where you know, who knows why, you know what I mean? And I'm not going to blame my ancestors for anything. Hell, I'm grateful to them. I would never tear down a statue of anybody. My son flew over the city where Stalin came from. And he's a Navy pilot, and he landed and he said, in the town, Stalin's statue is still up. I said, good. Because every time people walk by, they can see what a murdering bastard that asshole was. You know what I mean? Don't tear down even the people you hate. You know, they can teach it. Stalin probably liked dogs. So I don't know. Maybe he might have been a good neighbor to grow up with, for all we know. But he was a murdering piece of crap in real life. You know, or you know, shit. Hitler was a vegetarian, for all you people who are vegetarians. I mean, just because you're a murdering monster doesn't mean you don't have good qualities. I mean, shit, look at Dan.
I was wondering when I was coming back around. That was good. That was good. Yeah. I know Rob was sitting there going, okay, where are we going with this? I go, give it a minute. He's coming.
Hold on. The hammer is coming.
But humor is always a defense mechanism. And that's why we use it. And that's also in all humor, there's a humor's only funny if there's a little bit of truth in it, right?
No, but the reality is that that's necessary. Anybody that knows me and Rob has done it, Pat and I, we did it before this. If you could see the clip 10 minutes before we got on here, it was all deflecting and joking. And I know we can't put it on the air, but that would be, you put that at, Pete puts in there censored.
our editor-in-chief of the website, Peter, who's thing there, who probably should join us on these things. He told us, clean it up. Give it the order. You knuckleheads, clean it up.
But the fact that you were willing to go there, so none of this is rehearsed. None of this is like, hey, can you do this? It's got to be real. All these questions that we ask Pat, the conversations that Rob and I have, I don't like saying, okay, we got to do this, this, and this. You being willing to go there shares a lot, and anybody that watches that, thank you for sharing that piece that nobody else knows about. But there's a reason, and not to compare it with what you just said, but in general, there's a reason there's a kitchen, there's a reason where there's a bathroom. You do what you need to do in the bathroom, or you do what you need to do in the kitchen. And if you don't have a place to do certain things, like have a conversation, then it's going to come out ugly elsewhere. So that's something that people need to understand. You don't necessarily have to go in an inpatient setting. You don't have to go see a counselor. You might be a chaplain. It could be a friend. It could be a coworker. It could be a mom or dad. It could be a spouse, whatever it is, your dog. It could be your higher power. If you have that, whatever it is, that's what we try to teach people that may have just too much stimuli that's going on. If we got into it more, again, that's just one of the 40 plates that you're spinning, Bob. And the same goes for a lot of other people, but how do we manage that? With that said, Pat, I'm going to ask you, and I know we're getting to our time, but this is key. Is that we talked earlier about, you know, we didn't talk about leadership, but a lot of people promote, hey, listen to me because I have the recipe for being a great leader. It's not me. I don't have that recipe. But there, in your growth as a, I'm going to say as a man, then as a fire chief, I think one of the mentors was that city manager. Right. You didn't look for that. No. You fell across that on accident.
Right.
And you probably look back and go, holy crap, get out of my friggin' way and look for people like that, that was honest, upfront, direct, and challenged me.
Correct.
Who is your mentor? And can you say you've mentored somebody yourself?
So I'm going to go back to one thing Bobby said, just because I don't want to let it go, because I can hear Sean and Eileen screaming behind me in this kitchen. So I need to say it. So the sharing that you don't do, Bobby, because you feel that's not your role, is that's not a bad thing. That's your why. Your why is to take care of your boy, and you take care of your boy in your way, and you take care of others in different ways. And that's not your why. So it's not certainly isn't a weakness, and it's not a decision. And you said it before, and it's true. We're all unique, and you're unique, and that to do that would be a disservice to who you are. So please don't ever feel bad about that. For me to get up there and talk about it, that's my why. It gives me purpose, and it keeps my two angels behind me awake and alive, and keeps me connected with them. So that being said, you need to listen to them, or else they'll be talking to you later tonight. In terms of the mentorship, again, like I told you, there are certain angels I think get sent into your life. She was one of them. And the people I've been continued to be mentored my entire career. And that the career includes the 360. So it's both professionally and personally. I've been mentored by people I've coached with. I've been a volunteer high school baseball coach for over 20 years, and working with other coaches and watching them mold young men on baseball fields. I've used the way they've talked to those kids, the way they've gotten insights about listening. And I've used that to walk back into the firehouse and build my team in the firehouse. Professionally, I had Chief Paul Becker was the chief of Lyle Woodridge Fire District. He was kind of a Babe Ruth in our state when I was a brand new chief. He wrote me a handwritten card the first time he met me at a meeting and sent it to the fire department with no cells back then. It was a home phone number saying, "Chief, if there's anything you ever need, here's the number you call." And after that, I would write those cards to other people. Another chief who mentored me, Bob Graham, would send cards home that he learned from the original President Bush about just saying, you know, your son was in this battle and I heard about it and what a tremendous story, and send it home to the family. Because you don't give a firefighter a congratulations letter or a commendation because it's going to go in the garbage can. So you send it home to the families and go, thank you for sharing your person with us. So that really taught me. And then the other thing that really I think has helped me is to realize that if you're really a good leader, because there's no leadership, I don't have that module. I wish I did. I'd be a multimillionaire. But what I learned early was you have to make sure that you're very comfortable in your own ego. And in order to do that, you need to surround yourself with people who are a hell of a lot smarter than you, and then rely on them and hand them your cape and go, here, you go do it. Because I'm not smart enough to know how to do that. We do that on the emergency scene, no problem. Technical rescue, hazmat, the chief doesn't run that. The lieutenant doesn't run that. The experts do. But when it comes to leadership, we go, oh, okay, I got the five. So I guess I'm supposed to be the leader. Well, hopefully you can role model it, but you need to use the people around you. And those are the people who've mentored me, because they didn't need the credit. They just did the work.
Thanks, Pat. Rob? Your thoughts on that?
Sorry about that. I was typing up back into comments, but mentoring. So mentoring for me, I mean, I'm part of a mentoring group that works outside of it. And I think that when we're looking at all of these things and to echo what Pat was saying about Bobby, and that we're all unique and we're all individuals. When it comes to mentoring and how we work with one another, there is a lot to be given, but it's like my experiences sharing with somebody else or the experiences that Pat got from these other chiefs, they may not fit my life, or what I'm sharing may not fit the other person's life. But what it does is it broadens their, in my opinion, it broadens their perspective a little bit more to see a little bit bigger piece of life. So they may have only had their life like this, very narrow, and sharing with other people and gaining from other people, it helps push the, you know, the banks of that river to see things that you've never seen before. I mean, go back to what Pat was just saying about the president of the village. I mean, what a great lesson. As he was telling that story, I'm sitting here and I'm going, man, I'm with Pat. I would have almost told them to go pack sand. And that is the Italian side. I'm not Irish like Bobby and Pat, but that's the Italian side. And that, you know, something from that type of experience would be a great experience to move forward with in life.
Yeah, I ask you, Rob, because we laugh and joke, and we've met knowing each other now for probably 6 years, right? I mean, you've mentored a ton of people. You're very respectful of a lot of different people, but from the Fools organization and obviously from your own department to be moved up the ranks, obviously the people in charge recognized you as somebody that shares your wealth and does it in a certain way that they need you at the top, much like these two other individuals that made all the way to the top.
Unlike Bobby, I think I sometimes share a little bit too much and it can get me into trouble at times. But I know, and I was saying, I was on the chat, I think Peter posted it up, but somebody who's listening was talking about how they've gained a lot of knowledge at the kitchen table. What I was trying to communicate back was, you know, yeah, the kitchen table in the firehouse is probably the best place to learn and the best place to decompress. And as we've talked about peer support and everything that's going on, all these new things, is like when the fire service started changing, our comfort to share basically the kitchen table, the firehouse kitchen table changed, and we're no longer, you know, we were becoming more individual. We have all of, you know, we have individual devices that help us separate ourselves. But when we really just kind of get back to the basics, I mean, this is just like training. We go back to the fundamentals. And if we can get our firefighters back to the kitchen table and we can start sharing in our lives, open at whatever level that is that we can share our experiences, the more we talk, the more we share, the better we're going to be as a whole. And so the listener who said that they've learned a lot there, I could not agree more. There's a lot that can be made there.
But you do it in many different venues. You do it at FDIC, you do it through Fools International, you do it from your department, and you do it individually. I've seen it, and I'm not trying to blow smoke here, but from that thing about mentoring, you and Bob and Pat are, at least from my vantage point, you don't promote yourself as mentors, and that's what makes it so appealing. The ones that do promote themselves as a mentor, I am cautious of. The things I've learned, guys like Steve Chikorotis, he never promoted himself as something like that. He did. And so that's the thing, is that we have to, the kitchen table, and I don't like correcting people, but in the sense of that, Rob, you said things are changing. Things are always changing. It's, are we changing with it or against it? And that goes from the mental health piece of it. There's so many variables that happen in a given day that affect me, you guys, us, people that are struggling. What happens is and to go back, and we're going to wrap this up, is when Pat talks about that unimaginable grief and loss, and as he learned from somebody else, if he stays there, That's not good. So from a mental health standpoint, it's okay to be sad. It's okay to be angry. We all are at different points. I get angry when somebody cuts me off on the street, but I don't stay there. I pull around them and cut them off. No, I'm sorry. My counselor told me not to do that, and the police as well a couple of times.
I think we need to let Bobby. I think we need to let Bobby in, don't we? I'm sorry, you were still on the point.
We can't stay there, and that's the thing, Pat. That is great. Is you found your outlets, you found your stride, and you've had a lot of great accomplishments, right? And again, the sadness of physically losing two close people to you. You have not lost that spiritual and emotional connection with them. You found it. So thank you for sharing your story with us. Thank you for writing a book. Thank you for being a friend and the conversation and being our guest again.
Dan, you can go a tad longer. I know Pat wants to share a story. I do apologize. I've got to jump on this next meeting. It's a critical meeting for the show, but I just wanted to share one final thought, and it'll be a tough one for you, Pat, and I apologize. When you're at FDIC, you know, firefighters are huggers. We hug. Even the most stoic among us, I love the hugs. So we're huggers. And so 5 years ago or so, 6 years ago or so, I wasn't feeling well. I was ill, and Eileen came up with Pat. We were in the hallway. We call it the long one, that, you know, right kind of near the fire engineering booth, but down a ways from it. There's like a copy fax shop right next to it, Pat. I can tell you, I could see the whole thing. And Pat and Eileen stopped, and Eileen gave me a hug. It was the last hug I ever got from her. And she said, "I'm praying for you." And man. So I loved her. I still do. I love you. And last year, Bob Callahan was with us. And Bob Callahan was taught at FDIC forever, wrote forever. And Bob came to the Cancer Support Network's comedy night thing and was giving everybody his final hugs. He knew he was dying. And Bob passed away about 2 months after FDIC. But he came to FDIC to get the hugs. And it's a hug you'll feel for the rest of your life. I can still feel Eileen's arms around me. And I can feel Bob's arms around me. And Bruno's arms around me, and Brennan's arms around me, and Steve Alk, and all our great friends, all our great friends that we've lost. So don't miss the opportunity when we're all together in a few weeks. Just hug the heck out of everybody you possibly can. And it doesn't have to be a big sappy thing or whatever. Just get the damn hug. You know what I mean? And if you're not a hugger, go back to being a cop, for God's sakes.
Be a clubber.
Thanks for joining us, Bob, and thanks for sharing.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you. Love you all.
Love you too.
Yeah. Thanks, Bobby. I want to hear Pat. Pat was going to tell a little story about the kitchen table.
Yeah, I was trying to do a humorous story, and then he went and nailed me there. So I can see Eileen standing behind him. And I do agree with the hug thing. It's one thing I put in the book. If you don't know what to say to somebody who's suffering, hug them. So I just finished, hopefully, with a kitchen table story that's a little bit of humor. And it was a guy I had in the state of Michigan when I was doing one of Sean's talks. When I got done, he was the IT guy, one of the firefighters who helped me. And he said, "Chief," he goes, "I got a story for you." He said, "We have a paramedic on duty. She really struggles with diabetes. And not unusual for every morning at the kitchen table, in the middle of our discussion that nobody pays any attention to, she lifts her shirt, she gives herself a shot of insulin and goes about it. Nobody misses a beat." So I decided one day, he said, when I came to the kitchen table, I put all my pills out on the table. And I remember his name was Mikey. As we all know, every Mike's a Mikey. And everybody looks at him and go, "Mikey, what's up with the pills?" And He said, well, you see how Dawn gives herself a shot of insulin every day. We realized that if she doesn't have to take her insulin, she gets a little goofy. So we remind her, if you get your candy bar, get your Coke up there in the locker, so you make sure you take it if it sounds like a bad alarm. And he said, we know that if she doesn't take it physically, she can't overcome what that disease is. He goes, kind of the same thing with these pills. And they're like, okay, but yeah, but what are the pills for? He goes, well, I'm bipolar. Look at them, they go, what? He goes, yeah, I'm bipolar. So I have to take these pills every day. And they're like, what happens if you don't take the pills? He said, well, in the middle of the night, I'd probably go out to the apparatus floor, get an axe and put it in one of your heads. And everybody at the table just like had that heads like kind of half laugh. And then he went, no, I'm just kidding. And he picked his pills up and he walked to the bay door before he turned around. He went, but you'll never know, will you? And why is it that it's okay she does, but it's not okay I do, and walked out the door. And I told him, I didn't need to speak here at all. What you just taught in that 2 minutes was powerful, because it makes that mental health is a physical illness, not a choice, not a character deficiency. And he had the whole room cracking up, and he taught them so much in that couple minutes.
Well, thanks. Any last words, Rob?
No, I'm good. I just appreciate having Pat on again, and our next show, I could listen to Pat talk more and tell more stories, and we could talk more baseball. We didn't even get the chance to talk about the Mendoza line and where that came from. And right. But I enjoy having Pat on and just kind of tying everything together. It's, you know, it's about life, you know, work-life balance and having our family as a part of all of this, and just the journey that we're on in life, and how so many curveballs can be thrown at us. And if you don't keep your weight back on the curveball, you're going to be ahead of it, and you're going to be off balance. And so kind of the thing that we need to work on is our balance at the plate. And it's always an honor to be on with Pat. And it's great being on the show with you, Dan.
Thanks to both of you. Again, Bobby allowed us to have this conversation. I don't know if one or more people listen to this and what they get out of it, but it's really, that's why we named it Straight Talk, is that we all are in this together. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of if we have a venue to have this conversation. And Bobby, well, demanded, because that's how he is. He's a demander. Maybe he's Hitler or Stalin. Maybe we got to talk about that a little bit. You know, notice I'm talking real tough now that he's not listening.
He's gone.
Yeah.
You're feeling real comfortable now.
He's not shy, that's for sure.
He doesn't scare me. But when he said, now's the time, kind of like the talk back in 2018, we got to have this conversation. Not all day, every day. That's why we do it every fifth Wednesday and not every month, which is good for us. But we get to talk to people like Pat and engage and have a conversation. So, Pat, thanks for being here. I know personally, I'll just share this, is that the behind the scenes, right, is it takes a bit for you to get ready for something like this. They don't know that you were texting me before here and go, hey, how do I prepare and what do I do? And I don't try to give much direction at all, because I don't follow direction very well. So I just want it to be natural and have a conversation. And that's, you do way better doing that. But I know you get, your body gets excited. You sweat a lot, right?
Like, correct. That's why it's good you only see me from the neck up.
Yeah.
Get that shirt off when I'm done.
That's the secret stuff that people really want to hear, is what really goes on behind you. He's got to go and take his wet clothes and take a shower now that he can, because I helped you with your sewer.
That's right.
Even more stuff.
Yeah. Anyhow. Right. No, cool. Thanks. I always, it's funny when you get started on this program, you forget that you're actually doing something that people are going to watch, as opposed to this is a family Zoom call and it was the four of us, which is the way it should be. Cause anybody out there who's listening, I go, you're all part of our family and we're all part of yours. And we just need to stick together. And we'll be okay.
FDIC Friday, what time are you presenting?
I think I'm on at, you would ask me, Bobby, you'll kill me. I don't remember. It's late morning. I know it's late morning, all right, or early afternoon.
It's Friday, and I'm on Wednesday after Bob yells at us all and gets us to run through the wall. I'm on at 10:30. I don't know what room, but you'll all be exhausted after Bob's done talking. So, hey, great conversation. Thanks for both of you being here. And everybody out there, thanks for joining us. If you got some ideas, send them to Peter or Fire Engineering or to me, and maybe you'll be our next guest.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.